Welcome back to another episode of Schnepps Connects. Today, I'm joined by Dawn Pinnock, a seasoned public servant with nearly three decades of experience in New York City government and the nonprofit sector. Dawn began her career at a human rights organization and went on to hold leadership roles at some of the city's largest agencies, most recently serving as commissioner of the Department of Citywide Administrative Services, where she supported over 320,000 municipal employees. Dawn now serves as the president and CEO of the Center for Urban Community Services, a nonprofit that provides housing, healthcare, and social services to New Yorkers experiencing homelessness and poverty. Under her leadership, the organization continues its mission to serve more than 50,000 people each year with innovative, integrated programs. So Dawn, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm happy to be here, Josh.
Well, it's great to learn about your organization and share, you know, how you're supporting New Yorkers. But why don't we first just talk a little bit about you? I would love to hear how you got to where you are today in terms of your role with CUCS.
Thank you. So, as you mentioned in the introduction, I am Dawn Pinnock. I proudly serve as the president and CEO of CUCS. Our name of our organization is a bit of a mouthful, but it stands for Center for Urban Community Services. And so first and foremost, I'm a native New Yorker, you know, born and raised in the South Bronx, raised between the Bronx and Queens. And so I would like to say that service is deeply ingrained in my DNA. Both of my parents were government workers. And so I don't think anyone was completely surprised when I really committed my professional life to service. I'm also a proud product of the public school system. I say that loud and proud because I do think that sometimes folks don't fully appreciate, you know, how wonderful an experience public school here in New York City can be. But it really afforded me the opportunity to thrive in diverse communities, dealing with different schools of thought, different approaches to problem solving. And I feel like it served as a wonderful foundation for when I started off in the nonprofit world very early on in my career. And in that particular role, I had the awesome opportunity to do work internationally. I was a project coordinator for Haiti. And I think that through that work, it was very clear to me that service, whether here or abroad, is so key to all of us thriving. But I then fell in love with government. I pursued my graduate degree, once again, here in New York City. And at the same time, while I was going to school, I started working within New York City government, first at the Department of Probation, where I had the chance to work on reentry programs, but then I also was able to dabble in HR and learn, you know, really wonderful ways to build up our workforce to support New Yorkers. I then moved on to the Department of Juvenile Justice, where I worked on recidivism programs with youth in detention, and then ultimately was able to test out my training chops, where I then had the chance to provide training to our direct service providers there. I then had a pretty long stint at New York City Housing Authority with having some of my beginnings where my family members used to live in housing. I thought that that was a wonderful way to give back, where I worked to provide workforce readiness programs to NYCHA residents to convince and strongly encourage contractors that were doing work on NYCHA grounds to give residents of public housing a real job with real benefits. And then I worked at New York City Transit. I had the chance to serve there as the vice president of HR to provide, you know, more of that administrative rounding out of my skill set. And then I ended my career in city government, proudly serving as the commissioner for the Department of Citywide Administrative Services. And that particular organization is really known as the service provider to all city agencies. So whether it was Department of Buildings, Department of Health, NYPD, the fire department, all of those agencies were my client. And so I feel that toolkit really helped me well as I've now transitioned back to the nonprofit sector. So I really come into this role with, I think, a really rich toolkit that has direct operational experience, but also experience on the administrative side as well.
Well, Dawn, what it sounds like to me is you don't mind taking on a challenge.
Definitely not. You know, I love this city and I just think service is integral to all New Yorkers, you know, having a solid quality of life. And I would not be where I am if there were not programs in place here in New York City, you know, while I was in school or for government work. You know, government work helped my parents, you know, be promoted and advance and be first-time homeowners in their family and to put my sisters and I through school. So I feel like, you know, this is really part of my charge to continue to serve here in New York and for New Yorkers.
Well, thank you. That's really great to hear. And, you know, obviously your role now is with supporting those that are homeless. So was there any personal connection to that? I mean, that you took on this role?
Absolutely. And so for us, our target population and all of our work is centered around individuals that we consider to be vulnerable New Yorkers. So that could range from individuals who are currently or formerly homeless. It could be individuals who have resource constraints where they need to be connected to certain benefits at the federal, state, or local level. It could also be individuals who have had a history of trauma, substance use, or mental illness. And so our mission is intentionally broad because we are well aware that there are various things that people contend with just to, you know, put one foot in front of the other to maintain housing, but also to have a solid quality of life. And so definitely I have direct connections there. Members of my family have had to contend with similar issues. Closer to home would be my aunt, my father's sister, who I learned, you know, as a child that she had a history of substance use and had significant challenges at times with maintaining stable housing and really seeing the way my father would dive in to try to find out what resources could be available to really kind of coordinate services for her. I do believe that in taking on the role here at CUCS, this is exactly what my father needed at that time, because we do have a holistic and comprehensive approach to providing care to those in need.
So talk a little bit about CUCS and how it evolved from a university program to an independent nonprofit.
So I really feel very, very fortunate to be able to follow founders who in 1979, while attending Columbia, they wanted to figure out how to provide services to vulnerable New Yorkers locally, right, close by Columbia University's campus. And so that started in 1979, but then ultimately grew beyond a grassroots movement, where in 1993, we became a nonprofit. And so over that time, we have not only become widely recognized leaders in terms of the provision of supportive and transitional housing, but we've also been able to position ourselves as a nationally recognized training entity, where we train practitioners, behavioral health professionals, we train public safety professionals on various aspects of our care model. I think it's been extremely successful because it doesn't focus just on one thing. It really sees an individual as an individual, and it keeps that person at the center of everything you do. It centers around the goals that they want, whether that's to feel safe, whether that's medical care, psychiatric care, whether that's connection to employment or gaining job readiness skills, or potentially services for their children. Everything that we do centers around the client.
That's really great to hear. I mean, listen, I think one of the biggest issues and challenges that this city faces is the mentally ill, that many of them are on the streets of the city. So it's a real challenge, and I'm glad that you're addressing it. How do you go about finding people in need? Because one of the things I find is not only, you know, is it finding them, but getting them to be willing to get help.
You're absolutely right. It is a challenge getting folks, especially those who've been chronically homeless, off the street and into shelter. And so there is a quote that one of my esteemed colleagues, a member of my team, he says all the time that the relationship is the treatment. Mm. And, you know, our relationships are really grounded in our credibility, but also the trust that we want to foster with our clients. And so there are a few ways in which we connect with people in need. First of all, we partner with the Department of Homeless Services.
Oh, great.
They are a contracting agency with us. So oftentimes we may get referrals from them. We also have street outreach teams that travel, you know, the far reaches of New York City. And my hat goes off to them because they put themselves in situations that most would not.
I can only imagine. Sure.
whether it's, you know, in the train station, a bus depot, under bridges. And so encouraging individuals, you know, to come inside where it's safe, where we can serve you a meal, where we can provide you with clothing, socks, running water. So we have outreach teams that also bring individuals inside for individuals that want to be connected with social safety nets, like maybe a one-shot deal because they're concerned that they may be evicted because they've fallen behind on rent, or they want to have more information about Social Security or other benefits to which they believe they're entitled. Individuals can also come to our central office where we have staff at the ready to make those connections for them. We also have a footprint in certain court buildings. We used to have a footprint at Rikers, but that is sunset because of DOC's other programming. But there are many ways in which we engage those in need in order to place them on a path towards receiving continuity of care. Because once we meet them at that entry point, regardless of where we meet them, we do make available to them other services that we offer.
That's great. What would you say are some of your bigger services? I mean, you talked about a lot of them, but are there any other ones that in particular that you could share?
Absolutely. So definitely for us, the gold standard in terms of our work is to ensure that people are permanently housed. So we do operate out of 22 permanent supportive housing sites. And at those sites, we provide medical care, psychiatric care. We have case managers that are on site. So when we talk about our work, we, you know, proudly state that we have an integrated and embedded approach to achieving positive outcomes. So that means you have a medical suite that's on site in your building. That means that you have a social worker there available to talk to you, a case manager that's managing your case with you and keeping that case centered around your goals. So we meet people where they are, literally and figuratively.
Listen, everybody in the nonprofit world knows that a lot of this, to be able to offer these services, comes down to fundraising or getting the right grants or working with city, state, federal government to be able to get the funds. How do you go about raising funds?
So as I mentioned, we're definitely a partner with the Department of Homeless Services as well as the Department of Health. So they are our primary contracting entities. But since I've been on board, we've been aggressively working to really diversify our donor support strategy. So we've been talking to foundations. We've been identifying capacity building grants because we never want the work and the services that we provide to be limited by our direct capacity. So when we're developing frameworks around whether it's our primary care, our psychiatric care, or if there are trainings that we're offering, we try to create frameworks that are sustainable, but also scalable. And so we think that that is absolutely something that many funders are interested in because they don't want to believe that the money they provide today will not necessarily have an impact, you know, beyond the time that they've granted it. So we've been also directly reaching out to some of our longstanding donors and really highlighting the impact of their gift, because we feel that we would not be in business for over, you know, 40 years without the consistent support of people who absolutely believe in our work. And they show that support through that financial gift.
So, you know, I'm sure fundraising is a major challenge and probably a big part of, you know, making sure the services could be provided. But what other challenges would you say a lot of nonprofits besides your own are challenged with?
Definitely the current political climate, you know, has raised a host of concerns. So I think that every day folks are trying to remain as informed as possible. You know, we consistently hear about different executive orders, potential cuts in bills that may impact, you know, certain funding that we currently receive to support programs. So I would say definitely the political climate has given folks some concern and pause. Secondly, I would say that the nature of this work can be very mentally taxing, in some cases physically taxing. And I think as an industry, the rate of compensation is not necessarily commensurate with the level of complexity that comes along with this work. So looking at things from a workforce perspective, I think that folks are finding it very difficult to find case managers, to find social workers, to be able to retain our workers past a certain point, just because the nature of the work is very, very challenging.
Yeah, no, I know of that from, you know, my family's very involved in group homes for people with disabilities. And a lot of those people do, you know, God's work, and it pays less than McDonald's in some
Yes.
cases. So it's, you know, very difficult, not just to retain people, but to hire the right people and get anyone. Forget about, you know, the right people. Sometimes just for that wage to be able to get anyone is so difficult.
Yes, it is.
Well, you talked about the ways in which you're trying to, you know, diversify the way in which you're funded. Are there other things that you have implemented under your leadership, or some of the goals that you have to evolve the organization?
So definitely, as it relates to my first goal has been to just increase public awareness. So I'm so thankful that you've given us this platform. When I first thought about this position and applied, one of the things that was mentioned was that CCS was one of the best kept secrets here in New York City. And in our industry around supportive housing, training, you know, many of our partner agencies are trained by us, or they contract with us to provide primary care, psychiatric care. And so one of my primary goals is to really let the secret out. You know, I think that we have worked extremely hard to be a leader in these spaces. And I think that highlighting the impact of our work and the successful outcomes that we have, you know, based on this very flexible approach, is something that will help us, you know, in the short term and long term as it relates to funding or other kinds of donor support. Because we've also sometimes availed ourselves of skill sets that people can bring into the agency that maybe we're not well positioned to pay for. For instance, you know, in looking at IT investments, you know, many nonprofits, their money goes to, you know, caring for the client. And that absolutely makes sense. But I know you understand in running a business, you also need to have certain underpinnings that allow you to, you know, look at your data, show how your outcomes, you know, are in comparison to other partners in industry. And so we were really lucky to have PwC provide some pro bono work to assess our IT infrastructure. So that's why when I talk about donor support, it's not necessarily just on a monetary basis. It could also be the skill sets that we don't readily have within our organization. Separate and apart from that, we have also increased our footprint as it relates to our medical presence and our psychiatric work. So we are finally in Staten Island. And I'm saying that because, you know, I know that Staten Island, having worked in city government, you know, many folks will say that Staten Island is the forgotten borough. So I'm happy to state that we are now in Staten Island working with a partner agency to provide psychiatric and primary care. And we're also going to be hosting our first street psychiatry conference in July. And in that experience, we're going to be bringing nationwide practitioners to come and hear about our model, but also for us to share best practices. Similar to what you said, the mental health crisis is absolutely at the crisis level. And so we really want to make sure that we're being proactive and helpful to other practitioners so that we are ensuring that those who are in need receive the support that they deserve.
Yeah, well, how could our listeners go about giving a donation or giving support in any other way?
They can go to our website, which is www.cucs.org. On our website, there's a background, you know, relating to just our history. Also, it lays out our full service portfolio, as well as it directs you around how you can best give and support our work.
Well, listen, seeing the homeless and mentally ill in New York City is such a, you know, visual thing that we all see. It's a great cause to put everyone's arms around and help. So it's really been a pleasure talking to you and getting to know about the work that you guys are doing at CUCS. And, you know, I wish you continued success.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you sharing your platform, and I hope to continue the relationship.
It's our pleasure. Please make sure to subscribe to the Schneps Connects podcast so you're alerted to all of our new episodes. You can always stream us on any podcast platform or, of course, at podcast.schnepsmedia.com.